Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Everybody all around the world who can listen to LA Talk Radio and who loves Accent On with Ilona Europa. Today is Monday. We love Monday very, very, very much. I hope this will be one of the coolest and more relaxing Mondays for everybody. But anyway, we are here in the studio, and what can I say? Life goes on, and my guest, and really I have three great guests. One is pretty important, Mike Gormley. We just are continuing our segment on Gormley, which I love this title, on Accent On. And Mike, our friend to our show, right now is bringing to the studio his guests, his clients, people that he thinks we need to learn about. And I think I'm accepting very, very happy all invitations that he's really bringing to us. And this is the second segment, Accent On Gormley. Then we had last show with very, very cool Canadian, Hungarian, American, Australian singer, songwriter,
playwright,
film director, Peter Foldy. And of course, we had a great time with him. Really, really, really nice gentleman. And today, Mike, I think I'll leave this interview and pass it into your hands.
You think we've struck gold?
Yes, and you know why? We have like double gold, because we have our guest and her daughter. And you know, mother-daughter duo is the most dynamic things that can turn the world around. What can I say? And I know that our wonderful guest, she's a pretty strong and opinionated lady, very talented, great singer, songwriter, producer, all of the things that one day I want to be. And partially I am, but I don't produce my own records.
Partially, not partially.
No, I don't produce, I don't arrange my own records. And I'm really admiring that. That's very cool. Anyway, Mike, please introduce our guest.
Hi, good evening. Please welcome to the show Sheila Nichols. And just a little background. Sheila is, she probably hates this, but she's a veteran of the music industry. Mm-hmm. And it's is about to release her fourth recording, but in the past has had career highlights such as a big song on the college circuit, appeared on Tonight with Jay Leno, toured with K.D. Lang, had the song went to top 10, a lot of things like that went on, and then took a break. And is now back with a new record, which won't be out until September, called All of Nature. But she will be appearing for the first time in quite a while, Friday, June 2nd at Hotel Cafe. So Sheila, hello.
Hello.
And it goes with Accent On, too, because
yes,
she's very British accent.
She's very British, I know, but she's also Americanized British.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because really, really, I wish you can give us a little harder, a little tougher English accent, but I am admiring that you can also be pretty Americanized.
I've been here a very long time, actually.
How many years?
I want to say 27.
Oh, almost like me.
Is that correct? Good God. 1990 I got here, so that would make it about that,
yeah,
right?
Pretty close.
Before we go further with our interview, I really, really think we need to introduce your daughter. I love her. She is just very outspoken. I ask, you know, is this is your mama who gave her this great attitude towards life? Could be troublesome, we know, of course, because the girl is just dynamic. And but I love girls like that. You know, you can count sometimes, but really they will be writing their own life story for sure. What is your name, sweetie?
Amelia.
Okay, Amelia. I offered you a job, you know, you could be my sidekick. Then you kicked me, almost you kicked me, I laughed, because that was funny. But I think you like to talk. You are very funny, okay, and very smart girl. We said something that you have a good voice, but you don't care about singing. Or you care about singing?
You like Hamilton.
No, I like singing
Hamilton. To the microphone, yes, yeah, like to the microphone. You, yes, Hamilton. Just take.
I guess I like Hamilton.
Yes.
And I guess I can sing the first and second song.
Those are pretty tough songs. A lovely story. But you know your song also, Isn't She Lovely? That's what you knew. We were like...
I only knew it like...
Two.
That's a song we played for her when she was born.
That's right. Yeah. Then do you like Mama and her, what she's doing?
I mean, I like her music, but the fact that she has to work...
That's tough.
I don't like it. Because then I don't have as much time to hang out with her.
Very, very smart. Very smart, so. Sweetie. And very honest. I just love it. You're right. Because all children want mommy around, but also you wouldn't want mommy to not do what she loves to do. Yes?
Yeah.
That's always the problem. You know, then I know you'll be on her side forever and ever and ever, and she will be on your side, whatever you would like to do in life. Okay. Officially, we have Mama and Daughter Duo. Let's move on.
I want to ask Amelia, what's it like when your mom has to do, because she writes songs, she said, Amelia, go away, I'm writing. How does that work in the house?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm like, okay, fine. And I walk away, play with my toys, or sometimes, I guess, go outside, play with my cat. But
a lot of my songwriting goes on at nighttime.
Yeah.
Late at night.
Yeah, because you see, we have this situation where I'm divorced and we live right next door to each other and with my ex-husband, and so she spends half the time with him and half the time with me. So when she's not, I know she's just over there, but I get to bang on the piano at like 2, 3, 4 in the morning. That's when I kind of...
Did she inspire you to write a song about her?
Oh, she's completely inspiring. She's
but
so inspiring.
Did you write a song about her? Time to do that, Mama.
Not specifically, but I have definitely been influenced by her being in my life, for sure. I mean, you're right. It's a powerful thing that the mother-daughter thing is a wonderful experience.
Loved. Yes, you would like to say something? You can say, sweetie.
There's actually a song. Remember, you put my little baby
right.
voice in it.
I did record you.
Yeah.
That's right.
You did. You recorded me in one of your old... songs.
I did. When you were
cannot wait, sweetie, when we'll be playing your song, because you know what? I know. I heard your voice. You have a beautiful voice. And just time will show. Okay, Sheila, you have June 2nd. Very important show. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I know that Mike has logic how he wants to do this interview. I don't want to just stop the river of his thoughts. Then we mentioned that you are from England. Yes? Could you explain us and rewind a little bit your life back? And let's...
Sure. Well, let's see. I got here when I was 19. I sort of ran away from home to some extent, I suppose. I grew up in an environment that was, I mean, we were very lucky, we had everything, but there was a rub, I suppose, between my parents and I that in that I was sort of artistic and ephemeral and ethereal in the way that my brain worked, and I think that they were very much more traditional and wanted me to get married and have kids and get a get a job that was clerical, essentially, was essentially where I think they wanted me to head, and none of that was making any sense to me. So I blew up my whole world, threw all the cards in the air, and ended up leaving and coming here. That's the short story.
Yeah, that seems like short story. I read a little bit more, but nothing wrong with that. We all have problems sometimes with parents. We need to make a choice in life. You said you practically never looked back.
No.
You knew that.
And I love them. We get along great. We're fine. It's totally great. But I definitely made my own choices to not live in a provincial environment and ended up coming here, because this was the only place that I knew somebody else anywhere around the world was here. It could have been, South Africa or Bangladesh or whatever, but it was
You started in New York, right? You went to
No,
New York.
I started here, actually. I came here straight away, and I lived here for 3.5 years. And then I hadn't, you know, I didn't commit to my music till I was 25, even though I was writing songs when I was 14. But I think my brain, the provincial brain, you know, the concept of, like, the idea of being a songwriter was so audacious. I mean, it was so arrogant, mm-hmm. right? Because it was such a lofty thing to want, right? Whereas I think Americans grew up with the American dream, I can be anything. Yeah. I don't think that really exists in Europe, and you might relate to that. So it took me a long time to get my head around the fact that this was what I not only wanted to do, but it was what I was best at. And therefore, you know, the American way of going about it is follow your passion. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's really what we grew up with at all. So it took me a minute to really kind of, and of course, when I did finally commit to it, I was in New York at that point. But I left here after 3.5 years because I didn't know what I was doing. I bought a Volkswagen and I lived in my car for a good part of nearly 2 years. And it broke down in New York City and I ended up staying there.
Wow.
And I visited like 48
states.
But
it made it to New York.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it's good
for it. 1977 Volkswagen. You gotta love that.
You gotta love that.
Yeah,
meant
you really
to be
do.
New York. How long did you stay in New York?
About 3.5-4 years, and I put a band together. Mm. Like when I was 25, I was working as a nanny as well. And I was not legally here for a long time as well, so it was difficult to get work. But I was working as a nanny, and she was awesome. And I realized, you know, my friends in England were leaving university, and I really had nothing to show for myself. And I was like, you got to commit to something. What you got? I got 40 songs, so let's put a band together. When I made that choice, I pretty much got a 9-piece band together in about 3 weeks. And
wow.
We started playing, you know, Bleecker Street venues. We started playing CBGBs, and we just started to... I mean, once it fell into place, it got really fluid really quick.
Who booked?
Oh, I did. I just did it all.
That's what I'm going on, because, you know, it seems like, oh, I put my band and then I start singing, hey, and life. No, I know, it wasn't easy like that. Mm-hmm. Because, and the same situation right now for all aspiring artists. They really need to dig in and start mm-hmm. and work so hard. Plus now the social media, which mm-hmm. just I love to hate or hate to love, mm-hmm. one of two. As to me, is something that takes so much time that if we put time into something else, probably we'll have much more success in life doing what we like to do. Oh my gosh, I'm so ready to just close all my accounts. I'm like, why? You know, people will find us if we do something of matters anyway. And don't tell me that if I'm not there, people will not care about me. But maybe that is a different world. But anyway, I know I liked, we are almost in the same age. And I think life in 70s, 80s were more real. I would say the putting 9-piece band together probably... and convince 9 people to stay with you, practice with you. I don't know if you pay them.
No, I mean, there's another side story to that. I was working with a group called City Kids. City Kids was a youth group that I fell into because I got here when I was 19. And I didn't really know, you know, and I met a bunch of musicians in Laurel Canyon, and they were like, you know, you got to be with people your own age. And they got me into these, they sort of introduced me to these groups in Los Angeles, which were sort of political and artistic at the same time. And one of them was this group called City Kids, which was a original foundation was in New York City. So when I got to New York, I hooked up with them real quick, and they had mm-hmm. a space in Tribeca, and they had a little recording studio, and there was a lot of people there. So
I'm sure something like that exists right now, too.
Into,
that's a
yeah.
good advice
they
for young artists.
They still exist in New York City. They were great.
Oh, she's saying yes, yeah. yes. You know, people like that here, too.
Did you want to say something, Mike?
Actually,
yes.
I'm pretty sure recently we went to... a little something that I think of City Kids with a bunch of your
that's
old
right.
friends.
That's right. Yeah, we all got together recently again. Yeah, we're all still good
it
friends. It's a great network.
Everybody on stage.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
You keep contact with some of these people.
Oh yeah, it was one poetry. Of the most. It was very pivotal for me. Thank you, Mills.
But 40 songs and a 9-piece band, 3.5 years in New York, then album.
Well, then I had some really rubbish recordings, you know, like on just a cassette tape recordings, and they were heard by somebody in Los Angeles who said, come and make a record. So I'd left a garage load of stuff here already, and so I had stuff. I had, you know, chairs and tables in my friend's garage. So I came back and drove my Volkswagen that was fixed, drove it back again, and landed back here and started making a record probably around 97, 98 we made the record, and then... And I was performing out in places like Luna Park and stuff like that back then. And then Hollywood Records picked it up for distribution when it was completed. So that
don't tell me Hollywood Records picked it up. How did you get there? Picked it up. Okay, let's go. Hollywood picked it up.
Oh, well, let's see. Yeah.
They somebody, A&Rs, somebody, you needed to know somebody.
Yeah,
somebody
was
really loving you, or you not
well,
to
luck,
write it off.
Luck is involved, but you do have to know.
Yeah, I mean,
there was
a guy that I thought was a fan, and he was coming to the shows every year and every week and or whatever I was doing, and it turned out that he was an A&R guy.
Yeah.
So that is how it happened, and he took me in. And
did you sing a lot live shows here when you were in LA?
Mm-hmm.
Too?
I mean, I used to, yeah, Genghis Cohen and you know all those little singer songwritery venues around. I think the Mint and Hotel Cafe before, and house parties.
How big band do you have with you here?
Well, back then it was just me and James. We was just me and guitar player. I think we had a percussion player once in a while. And then when I went out on tour, I went out with, it was pretty sparse. It was like a cello player and a guitar player and no rhythm whatsoever. So that was how we went out. It was pretty sparse.
When you went out with Katie Lang, or you went out on your own first, or how did all of that come together?
Well, you know, Hollywood Records, they can wrangle a lot of really crazy big stuff. And so being involved with them, got me into those gigs. But yeah, and when we went out, I was very insistent on having female musicians, which is tricky to find, or it can be, which is silly because it shouldn't be. So I went out with just me and Mel and I think Rebecca. It was just cello, guitar, and piano is how we went out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when we did Jay Leno, I think we brought in a bass player and a drummer as well. Yeah.
I think we are talking a lot about music, and people say, probably she can sing. Yes, she can. We have three MP3s, and I was asking which one you would like to start introduction to your music. Reveal?
Yeah, Reveal.
That's
okay,
a good title for the first song, I think.
Reveal is a great song for me. I really enjoy Reveal.
No, we want to know more why.
Okay. All right, here we go. So
Reveal the Reveal.
It's actually a 3,000-year-old sutra that's been recently reimagined or recently retranslated by a guy called Lauren Roche. There are 112... little poems between Shakti and Shiva, and they are they're all translated from Sanskrit, and it's just extremely layered if you listen to these. Anyway, so this is one of them. He was writing a bunch of songs with some other artists like Donna DeLore, and so we ended up writing one as well. So Reveal is just it has a spiritual background in that there is only one, right? But you should just listen to it. It's a beautiful lyric. And it's very, very old.
No, so I really think it's very cool to know a little bit more why the song just happened this way. Reveal.
No.
song, or is that a nice song?
What a beautiful song. I love the backing vocals. I love the smoothness. All is about love, anyway, in the end. That's the most important thing.
Thank you.
That's called Reveal. That song's called Reveal, and
yes.
It does.
Honey, we love it.
Oh, thank you, guys.
I know Mike was saying, Sade, you got the move.
Yeah, then don't you think?
Yes,
you hear
she's
a little
got
Sade
it.
In there?
Very nice.
Thank goodness she thought that was a compliment.
That's
of
a crazy compliment.
Oh, yeah,
are you
of
kidding
course.
Me? Sade is like the queen.
Then, you know, I would love to know when you write, what idea comes first? Mm. First, lyrics, words? Or you find the melody hook? They call it holistic.
It's holistic, yeah. What I mean by that is you know, it just sort of arrives in a sort of ethereal way. It's not really a logical or linear process, I think.
Okay, but if it's at 3 in the morning and you're scheduling at 3 in the morning for writing session, are you already ready to record something because it's in your head? Or you say, okay, 2 in the morning, I feel like writing.
No, I go 2 in the morning, I'm going to go crash and bang at the piano because it feels good.
Okay.
It's sort of like it starts as a way to just, it's almost like going to the gym,
yeah.
Playing the piano, sitting down and just like working out some chords and then mm-hmm. Sitting in the silence what rings out will bring melody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what I do actually is I forge a whole song before I record it so that I'm clear that there's a skeleton, because I think a good song is you have to have a really
of course
strong skeleton, yeah. Right? So and then you can stick whatever you want to it once you've got your tempo and your bass line and your chord structure and your key signature and your melody, and you know, you forge the skeleton. So that's how it usually works for me, is that I'll sit down, I'll push myself to find new chords or new progressions, because I like to do things. I like to have
harmonizing
interesting chords
in a way,
right?
That they're not
I don't like to work with stuff that's already been done. I mean, there's so many songs that are written to 1, 4, and 5, or which is cool, and you can still write awesome songs to 1, 4, and 5, or 1, 3, 4, 5, whatever. But it's nice to work with, you know, ninths and thirteenths. And
but that's you. Yes, that's just you.
It's coming out from
your fingers, from your soul. This is the chord progression
that
you just love.
Not ninths and thirteenths, because that'd be really pretentious.
Of course,
but
yeah, that would be tough. Yeah, but I know that the idea for the song comes with him. Is you cannot mm-hmm. predict what really will be the
a
end
lot of
result.
People, I think, write formulaically, or they do write with an intention to make money or to write for
yeah,
a particular artist,
stuff.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that for me, that doesn't work. I mean, it just doesn't come out very well when I do that. So it's better for me to keep my muse really clear, because it's worked that way since I was very young, you know.
But then you invite collaboration to your life. You have somebody on your track. You don't want to say, oh, it's all mine.
I have amazing people on my track. You're kidding? I mean, I was very lucky in that I was given a chunk of money, just free money, which was so helpful, by a fan, essentially, to make this record. So what I did was I wrangled all my amazing favorite musicians, essentially in the neighborhood, you know, in Highland Park and Eagle Rock, and so we have you know, Kaveh Rastegar, who goes out with John Legend, he plays bass. We have Walt Fowler, who plays trumpet for James Taylor. We have who else do we have? I'm blanking all the names. We have Mitch Foreman, who is an old jazz head, fantastic piano player. who plays at the Big Tater all the time. Those cats are on there. Like, the horn section is from all that crowd. And Danny Frankel played percussion with Victoria Williams and Fiona Apple for a really long time. Gary Novak is the drummer, is on there, who played with Alanis Morissette for years and years. And then half of Michelle and Degner Cello's band is on there, too, as well. So it's these crazy super musicians that
yeah.
I put together. And you know, I gave them all the charts and I gave them all the songs and I was like, play these. And when the musicians are that amazing,
yeah.
they can play them 2 or 3 times and you're done.
Yeah.
And then you just mix and overdub.
And then we'll go to the process of mixing, because having a woman who is in charge from the beginning to end, I just admire you for that the most. First is your vision. Second, you can not blame anybody if you made a wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what, this is the right choice because you really want what you want, and you better get it.
I appreciate that. You know, the thing is, it's like any other industry, and not to whine about it, but there's just a lot less women who take. I mean, there's a lot of chicks that sing,
yeah.
but there's not that many that. And you know, I think I got that from Ani DiFranco, quite honestly. I mean, it's so great. All of, you know, what she chose to do way back when, just forging new territory for women in general. Because she, once you take it from beginning to end, you're absolutely right. No one can tell you what to do, and I mean, there's a filter because I don't really engineer the Pro Tools. I mean, I can to some extent, but I'm not as a proficient. And so you always have to take your vision and push it through the engineer. Yeah. But then again, when you get an engineer who's willing to go down rabbit holes with you and not dictate
again,
what you think you should
sound
be doing. Yeah,
his ear really makes in your head. And
yeah.
That's
there's
beautiful.
A song on this record that knocks me out, right from the title, as a matter of fact. You've described the whole album as a collection of social commentary to music. This song, get the title of this song, God, in brackets, God, Bill Maher, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And you've got to ask what that's about.
Yep.
And the lyrics are very strong, but there's a background. There's got to be a big background to this song.
Huge,
and,
big.
And I don't like to ask people to explain their songs. Don't explain, but just give us a little idea of how you got here, and then we take a listen to it.
Okay, let's see. Well, so I grew up very differently, it seems, to Americans, where most people were not going to church. In England, it seems that most people were post-church, and when I was growing up, you know, we were taught that church was, or religion, essentially, was antiquated, and that church was for people who were old and or needed to believe in something that wasn't real. So I grew up in a kind of a dogma of secularism, really, in the sense that, you know, scientific method and empirical evidence were the only way, which I lived with for many years, and I sort of and it became even stronger when I got over here, and I felt like, you know, in the Bush era, he was sort of polarizing, you know, using to divide us, you know, with this which always seems so utterly ridiculous. But, however, I am an ephemeral and ethereal person, and there are certain experiences in my life that I can't explain in a logical way or in an empirical evidence kind of a way. And so, in my own existential crisis, as one always, all go through, right?
Yes, searching.
I decided that I needed to really work it out for myself. So the word God for me was always so baggage-laden, and it seemed that everybody had a slightly different idea of what that was.
Yeah.
It seems that so much division throughout human history has been created over this difference of the definition of this word, right? But when we really think about it, what are we really talking about? We're talking about it's one thing. There is no separation. There's no difference between your definition of God and my definition of God, because God, there's only one God, right? So also, I think for me, again, the definitions of God that were in my brain were dogmatic. You know, old man in the sky, you know, angry at sinners. So I decided that it was time for me to work out what that meant for myself. And so when I did that, I decided to try to remove all of the dogma in my brain and ask, what is left? What do I have left? And I started to try to come up with new vocabulary around that. So the thing that was never born, that never dies, the thing that moves the planets is the same as moving our heart, the omnipresent, the omniactive, the isness as opposed to the is-notness. These are all words that helped me find something, you know, and here we are in America, freedom of speech, freedom of expression.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a woman could get stoned for blasphemy for deciding what, for herself, what God is, right? Because traditionally we need a priest to be able to have that relationship.
Yeah.
But when you meditate and you sit down and find a calmness in yourself, I do think that that spark of divine is available to all of us and is in all
Absolutely.
Of us, right? Because there's nothing that is not that. There's only one. It is all connected. So in that wake, I decided that I just sat down at the piano and started to write this. So what I'm calling it is a post-atheist deconstruction and reconstruction of the concept of God is what it is.
And now she put this into the song. Let's listen. God. Yes, I have it.
On that word, yeah, I mean so many different things to so many people. Yeah, what is God? Oh, 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 God, maybe something infinite in all. those perceived and unperceived alike.
Beautiful song.
Beautiful, very healing.
Do you ever sit back and now you've got it recorded, it's done. Do you ever sit back and listen to that song just as a listener?
Thank you. Well, that's it. You know, I play it as a listener because it's cathartic, right? Mm. Which is what I feel like I'm so blessed, because songwriting is a way to exercise your demons so much of the time, you know? So I do, but I play it. But I do love the recording. The recording's awesome. Pretty happy with it.
I wasn't speaking technically.
Oh. I love it, though, because I think we all need something to surrender to sometimes. You know, there's a point where I think everybody goes through things in their life. We can be in our bravado and in our chest beating and our posturing and pushing through life, and something sometimes, you know, the tragedy always happens, and we need to find that inner strength, that inner faith, that inner hope. And if you're in the secular world, you're every man's an island. It's much harder to find that. So it does bring me a great deal of peace, that song, for sure.
Wow. You know, in a sweet way, we have something in common, Now we do, for sure, because we met. But you have a song that is called Faith. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a song after my dad died, daddy died. And I recorded the song in my own studio, home studio. And then I tried to re-record in a big studio, as a, you know, paid studio. And I couldn't go through the song because obviously the song was written for the reason. Mm-hmm. And also, privately, I really, really felt in this time really bad in life. Then I was very vulnerable. And I know that your song, Faith, also changed a little bit stuff in your career. Then I wish we have your song too, because I would like play a little bit of mine and then play yours, what the faith means. But I really believe that, like you say, God and faith, this is stuff that we need to find in ourselves, the inner strength, inner beauty. And it's not a religion, it's not anything like that.
Right.
It's just very personal, and the journey of discovering yourself never ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're not preaching with these songs. These
not
are observations.
I'm not proselytizing. No, I'm not trying to. It's very important to me that, I guess the intention as well, I mean, afterwards, after it was written, it made me realize that, especially in these times, we have to have something to bring this all together. And, you know, we need a unifier, right? And every social movement in the past, you know, because I've been a political activist for a while. In fact, Amelia and I spent 2 months at Occupy LA, actually, living there for a while. Hold on, please. Do you want to say something about Occupy?
Yeah, and I think we were the people who created, we were the guys who created Kid Village.
Yeah, we created a women's space there that became the queer meeting space, and it was called Kid Village. It was a safe space for women and mothers and families and children to be a part of the movement. But what the most important thing, as I noticed, was that when we were working together, we at the very beginning of Occupy, we were really working together to create a horizontal environment. And basically what that would mean is that, you know, white privilege, male privilege, and first world privilege would be called out, would be the backdrop of our knowing, so that when we would come together, the microaggressions, right, the subconscious ways that we divide and conquer each other would be dissolved, essentially. But I also noticed that a lot of people were so, and we're talking about marginalized people, a lot of people who went to Occupy were marginalized people, marginalized groups of people, and there's a great deal of trauma that can happen in people's minds. And so we have to, all of us, come together. We have to have self-inquiry. However much trauma we've all been through, and a lot of people have been through it more than others, it's so important, I think, at this point, if you can get to that place, to have a level of self-inquiry, so that when we come to the table to create change, we are full. We are full and able to be responsible for our own psychology and not act out and not be reactionary. The more that each individual understands their own personal way of being in the world, the more likely we are able to come together and really unify to create a better world. And I know that's really lofty, but that's what I want more than anything else. I want a world with compassion. I want a world that's empathetic. I want a world with no warfare. And I do believe that's totally possible. Personally, I believe that's possible. I don't think we need to keep living in this world where we think warfare is inevitable. I don't think that's necessary.
Wow. Boy, you need to have your own show. May I play a little bit on my faith? I will play something, because this song is really important to me.
So your song is also called Faith?
Yes.
So
Oh my gosh, faith, very important. Mm. Loving people, believing that we have the best to offer to the world, to each other, and that the religion is not something that will divide us, mm-hmm. that will bring us together, mm-hmm. that God, like you mentioned, is something that we are reaching out to and looking for and mm-hmm. trying to describe in ourselves mm-hmm. what the God is. Mm-hmm. God is one. Mm-hmm. All the religions.
Right, and if God is one, if this concept, you know, if this understanding of God, once you remove like all the scary aspects of the years of definition of it, because God is undefinable by definition, because yep. it's an infinite situation here. We're
yeah,
talking
then
about
why to fight for yeah. the one definition of
well,
God,
right.
which
and
it doesn't exist.
This totally
crazy
tiny
world, I know.
Anthropomorphic perspective on this ball of mud in space. I mean, who are we to actually define definitively
Absolutely.
What God is? We don't know. It's a constantly ongoing question. And therefore, yeah. we should absolutely do it for ourselves. We can. Because
Sheila, you're lovely. Your music is amazing. It's calming. It's healing. It's just philosophical. It's smooth. It's just beautiful. And it's very well produced. And it's just perfection.
You're so sweet.
You know? And honestly, that's it. And I know people need to just see you and come to your show. And Mike, again, is July 2nd.
June 2nd.
June 2nd. And
Hotel
June
Cafe.
2nd, Hotel Cafe, mm-hmm. Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Will this be, can you videotape this show?
I don't think they do that there. I think they're pretty strict about it. You just have to come to the show.
Really? They don't let you to
film? It's a Friday night. You're going to come down and it's going to be a great show. I'm really excited. You know, it's a great club as well.
You are going to do a video on God, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to do a video on God, but we're not going to video that night. I think you're
No, not live, but you're... But eventually,
yeah, we need to do that.
And your CD is already ready to be released in September. But if people can purchase something there of yours,
I'm gonna have a couple of copies there that night.
Wow! Yeah. Okay. And if people want to connect with you, how they can get you?
Okay. Well, SheilaNichols.com is a good way. That's my website. I have two L's in my last name. Sheila Nichols Music on Facebook. You can find me there. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. She Nichols is what I use for those. But come to the show. I want
June 2nd time?
8 o'clock.
And Hotel?
Hotel Cafe in Hollywood, California.
In Hollywood?
That's on Cahuenga.
This is only one show?
Right now, yeah. I'm doing a couple of festivals, I think, in the summer. And then we're going to do another show in September. And, you know... It's moving right now. Mike's so helpful.
Wow,
so
Mike.
September would be kind of more of a launch party kind of thing. This one is, and the tickets are selling very well. There was actually a bit of a contest of the first 10
would get
the copies of the CD, mm-hmm. and they might be gone already.
I think they are.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but
I will have a few.
But try anyway.
Yeah.
Hey. That's have a faith.
Yeah.
You just go and just stay there, and I'm sure you'll see.
And we're going to break it down. Going to be a lot more acoustic than. I mean, the thing is, when you produce your own record, you know, you can go in any direction you want, and that's the thing with this record. It's sort of genre.
Depends from the venue. You know? Depends for people. Yes,
this
beautiful.
One is. Yeah, we've just got a really great crew of musicians.
But for people who somehow cannot see you in September, please give us the name of the album.
Oh, the name of the album is All of Nature. And then, in parentheses, a collection of social commentary to music.
Oh, that's tougher to remember, but I think, again...
Just go with All of Nature.
I think so, too. Now, come to the garden. Our show is almost over for today, and this was lovely and just so uplifting in a way, like in different ways. I just love it. Mike, this is a very special guest.
Very special. I knew that.
Oh, then come to the garden.
With two very special guests.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, your baby, too. I feel special, too, by having everybody here. Okay, come to the garden.
Come to
Any
the garden. Yeah,
description
come to the garden
before?
Is the jazziest number on the record. You know, again, the record itself is very genre-free. This song really called for going it with a full horn section and getting... So it sort of starts out with this sort of... I should say this too. It's also a co-write with Michael Bernard Beckwith. If you know who he is, he's a sort of a very brilliant esoteric teacher who has a spiritual center in Agape in Culver City, and he's been interestingly inspiring to me. And so some of it came from a couple of lines that he said. So I gave him a writing credit on this, But it's really kind of starts out in a very spiritual way, but it kind of ends up with, you know, sort of standing on a table like swearing your bra in the air.
That's why the song is ending our show. All begins the new one in September, because I'm sure you'll be back. Come to the garden.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Sheila. And Amelia.
Greatest ally to the journey of the self keeps us awake and present to the now. Well, then you hear the wisdom of the heart. Who are you? Are you authentic? Can you touch ecstatic love? Welcome to the garden and free yourself now. Temple is a film and fall divine love.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.